could take Arthur Piccolo with you. Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. We're going to cross the Atlantic, and we are hopefully linking up with Dr. Maureen Murphy, professor of teaching and curriculum, and rumor is that she actually runs Hofstra University in Long Island, but she is indeed an historian. For the Irish Hunger curriculum, the Irish Hunger Memorial at Battery Park City. And she is, if I may say so myself, the premier historian for all things Irish, and I mean that very sincerely, as from Dublin, Ireland. I welcome you, Dr. Maureen Murphy.
Thank you. Thanks, Adrian. I'm very glad to be talking with you this afternoon.
Now, let me ask you, first of all, you have made numerous trips, not only to Ireland, but to particularly in Ireland, as a visiting professor, as an historian, and you've been doing that for decades.
50 years.
God. Can you recall?
I started as a graduate student 50 years ago.
My God, can you recall your first trip to Ireland and what did that mean to you?
Yeah, in 1961, before my last year in undergraduate school, I was a student at Cortland. I went on a student trip. My parents very generously gave me a trip to Europe because I had won a Regent scholarship, which helped pay my expenses. So my dad said, well, you can go to Europe. He knew I wanted to travel this summer before your senior year. So I went, and part of it, of course, was Ireland. And I remember very vividly going down to West Monroe Station, getting the train to Longford. And then my grandmother, who was really in an institution with dementia, had a moment of lucidity when she said to me if I was going to go to the house where she was born. So I was going to Europe the summer before my senior year, and I went to Longford from Dublin. I hitched out to Drumlish and walked up to Bandos Bridge, turned left through the bog, took Flinsville and left into Kilarthur, the townland where my grandmother was born, and I met my family. I was the first to return. So that was a very, very vivid moment, and that got me started on my doctoral dissertation, which was the relationship between oral and written history, and the relationship between the Battle of Ballinamuck in oral tradition, and I collected various generations of that, and then all the written records in English and French. And I thought I would have to learn Irish, so I went to Fashadaga when I came. I was at Cortland, I went to Indiana, and I got a Fulbright to Dublin, and that was 50 years ago. And that's when I went out and learned some Irish in Connemara and continued on my historical research.
Dr. Maureen Murphy, my guest friends, the Lower Manhattan Historical Society, great American Independence Day parade this year is indeed very, very significant. It's going to take place on the July 4th weekend.
That's right.
And no better, first of all, I want to congratulate you on being selected as the Grand Marshal of a parade, which if Arthur Piccolo, who's running this whole operation for the Lower Manhattan Historical Society, I assume he has the research done as he does everything else three times over and then once more, just to be sure. The relationship between the St. Patrick's Day parade and the very area of Lower Manhattan, can you tell us about that?
Yes. Of course, you know this parade will start at the Hunger Memorial, and you and I both were involved in that project, so it's appropriate that you're getting the Alexander Hamilton Award, and we'll be marching together down to Battery Park, down to Bowling Green. And right near us in Bowling Green is number 7 State Street, the Mission of Our Lady of the Rosary for the Protection of Irish Immigrant Girls, that looked after 100,000 girls between 1883 and 1908. We've digitized the records for 45,000. So we're starting at the Hunger Memorial. We're coming down to Bowling Green. We have our backs to number 7 State Street in the Mission. And right in that Bowling Green area was the site of the White Star Line building where they posted the names of those lost on the Titanic. And the girls who came safely from the Titanic to the Carpathia to New York and were not met by families were taken to the Mission of Our Lady of the Rosary. And 2 weeks later, because New Yorkers are so generous, they were brought back for a little bit of debriefing, of course, to see how they were doing. But New Yorkers had contributed money for those girls who just arrived with the shirts on their backs, and that money was distributed 2 weeks after the Titanic went down. So it's a very rich area for us.
Yes.
In Irish studies.
Now, and indeed, we'd have to credit Tarlough McConnell and obviously yourself for resurrecting that part of our history as well, which up until recently there was hardly a paragraph available unwritten or publicized. The significance of the young girls who were waiting to be claimed by their relatives here, what was there a sense that perhaps some of those girls would, in fact, enter the order, become nuns? Was there a kind of, half and half there?
Yeah, and let me say, by the way, that we have a wonderful exhibition. Sherlock was involved, designed by the marvelous Tracy Turner, facilitated by Father Peter Meehan at number 7 State Street. We became the Battery Heritage Foundation, and they have been kind enough to, I believe, we're going to have the mission open on the day, on the 2nd of July, if people want to see our exhibition of this quite remarkable place. And to answer your question, yes, the number of girls who came over with their own names. I mean, they were not, they came over themselves and then went to joined the various of the religious orders. And I'm trying to go through records and try to recreate which of the girls who came through. And we use the Ellis Island records as well as the mission records, which are very helpful because they often provide information not on the ship's manifest.
Right.
So I'm going through that, and I'm going to try to figure out who of those girls, those 100,000 girls, or at least the 45,000 girls that we have digitized, who of those girls joined the mission.
Now, was it...
Joined the religious orders, rather.
Yes. Now, did they join various religious orders?
Particularly by the Irish religious orders.
Yes.
I think a lot of them were Sisters of Charity. A lot of them were members of the Presentation Order. So I think they came and they joined Irish, generally joined Irish religious orders. But again, we'll have to wait till I get more information about that.
The St. Patrick's Day Parade, which, if I understand correctly, was more of a protest than a parade in that area at that time. Who were the protesters, or were they all protesters?
Well, early on, you get people like Hercules Mulligan, who was who was George Washington's aide-de-camp. So you would have Irish who were protesting as part of the American protest leading up to the American Revolution. When we say talk about the St. Patrick's Day Parade, it just occurs to me to mention the author of the big and very, very beautifully illustrated coffee table book on the St. Patrick's Day Parade, you know, is our friend John Ridge. And I have been telling John about these remarkable records at the Mission of Our Lady of the Rosary. I kept saying, John, go down and have a look at them. One day I got a call from him, and he said, Maureen, I went down and I did have a look at those records. And I said, well, aren't they amazing? He said, I have to tell you what happened. And I said, well, what happened, John? He said, I opened one of the books, looked down, and saw my mother's name.
Incredible story.
And he didn't know about it. And he went back to his mother, and he said, well, what about this? And she said, well, she said, my aunt and my cousin were working, and they couldn't come to Ellis Island to meet me. So they sent a neighbor, and John's mother was very suspicious of this guy. She said, they sent some lewd Vermont to the island, and of course she wouldn't go with him. So at the end of the day, what they did at Ellis Island, first at Castle Garden, then at Ellis Island, was at the end of the day, the girls who were not picked up by family or friends, or the girls who were met by people that the local officials thought were a little fishy,
yes,
were held, and at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, they were from Castle Garden, walked across Battery Park, from Ellis Island, came in on a little ferry, and then walked across Battery Park to number 7 State Street, where they were put up for free and assisted in making contact with friends and family, and those who had to go further, if they were going to Chicago or Boston, they were assisted. And sure enough, Mrs. Ridge, John's mother, was kept at the mission. They contacted her mother, her aunt and cousin, and they came in from Brooklyn and claimed Mrs. Ridge. And Mrs. Ridge explained that she was, she was not going with some lewd woman. She was going to stay and wait till she was met by the people she was expecting. So it's fascinating stuff.
It is indeed, and indeed we should reference the Quinnipiac University President John Lee and indeed editor of that of the 250-year record.
That's right. That's John, who's really been the historian of Irish New York. You know, he does such wonderful work with county histories and wonderful work with. He's our man who knows more about the Irish in New York than anybody else.
Absolutely. And also, of course, the Executive Vice President, Lynn Bushnell, who was very involved.
Yes, he does. Yes, yeah.
We're
very lucky with our friends in Quinnipiac. And, of course, Christine Keneally, her work is just at the top of the list. And
The parade itself you mentioned, of course, what I refer to as our alma mater, Irish Hunger Memorial on VC Street.
Yes.
The parade route goes through a chunk of U.S. history, which, if you narrow it down, is really concentrated on Castle Garden and on Bowling Green, whole area. So whereas Alexander Hamilton had no Irish blood, definitely he must have been well surrounded by immigrants. And in hindsight, there would have been more immigrants from Ireland than other European countries.
Oh yes, there would have been. Yeah, yes. And I was just chuckling because, as you know, you and I know, we're going to be walking through Battery Park City down to Castle Garden area, but we're going to be walking through places that didn't exist in Hamilton's time. The infill from the World Trade Center that created Battery Park City. So that's kind of interesting, too.
Again, we should acknowledge, indeed, It is the Hugh L. Carey, Battery Park City.
That's right.
So we're not short of an Irish connection there.
No, not at all. He was one of the four horsemen.
Let me,
of course, as you know, in the Northern Ireland.
Yes. Now the flag, again, if we go back to the Lower Manhattan Historical Society and Arthur Piccolo, where did this flag come from that you took personally to Ireland?
Arthur's idea. Arthur had an idea, and he wrote to me, and he said, what if you take a flag to Ireland and run it up to the top of the top of the GPO? And I said, if you overnight the flag to me FedEx, I'll take it with me. But it's your show. You need to get in touch with the people. So he got in touch with a man called Barney Whelan.
Barney Whelan.
And he is the public relations fellow at the GPO, apparently. And so Barney said to meet me at 3 o'clock on Friday with the flag, and I did. And I had with me, it'll be interesting to you, Adrian, Munira Mutran from the University of Sao Paulo. Munira, in her life, has turned out nearly 50 masters and PhDs in Irish literature.
Oh, my God.
And she's in town. She had a fellowship or a scholarship at Trinity for 6 weeks, so she came with me. And Barney took us right up to the top of the roof of the GPO, and we walked out and walked up quite a narrow walkway up there. And Barney had a fellow there with a camera and two fellows who worked at the GPO, and they had the flag of the staff ready, and they hooked the flag onto the halyard of the GPO and then raised the flag, and it flew over the GPO on a beautiful Friday afternoon. It was a nice, clear, nice, bright blue sky, and the fellow took some photographs of it, and Barney himself took some photographs of it. So I'm assuming that's all right to Arthur Piccolo. And then down came the flag. I folded it up, just what I remember from Girl Scouts, how to fold the flag. And then it'll go back with me in my suitcase on the 28th when I come back to New York. And I'll bring it on the 2nd, and give it to Arthur. And then I think you and I raised the flag at Bowling Green.
Wow. And this is no... This is no... small flag. This is a walloper of a flag. What's the
This is a big flag. This is a this is a regulation size flag.
My guest friends, Dr. Maureen Murphy, the call from Ireland was actually taped last Sunday. We didn't want to talk to the good doctor until we were sure and very sure that actually the flag from Bowling Green, from the Lower Manhattan Historical Society, was actually that Maureen didn't get arrested at the top of the GPO. All went well, so you'll be back with the flag, Dr. Maureen Murphy. It is, again, it is an historic occasion. It is an amazing tribute on this centenary of 1916. I know you as Grand Marshal, and indeed the following day myself receiving the Alexander Hamilton Award. It's a sense of great pride for us, and we should encourage those who are going to be around on July 4th weekend. This is very Irish, it's very significant, and it is a centenary of 1916. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Maureen Murphy, and we look forward to seeing you, and indeed I'll be with you, on the 2nd, Saturday, again it's 11 o'clock, and in Federal Hall on Sunday. Thank you very much. And as
you're welcome. Always a pleasure.
It is indeed. Thank you. And friends...
And best regards from Dublin.
Thank you. And friends, you're listening to... You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Those who feel they might have gotten gypped this morning because we really had no time for music, if you're listening to us on irishradio.com, in about 15 minutes from now, when we leave some of our radio stations broadcasting our program live, I'll give you a ton of music beginning then. So, you know, do the best we can around here. But meanwhile, I want friends to go to the man who started all of this. Arthur Piccolo is the chairman of the Bowling Green Association. He's co-founder of Lower Manhattan Historical Society. And well, we've known Arthur Piccolo, actually, for a long time. Back in 1762, we met him, and we were very impressed with him. Okay, well, we 1762, Arthur Piccolo, I welcome you.
Thank you,
Adrian. A very significant date for Bowling Green, and maybe you'll fill us in on the Irish connection.
I will do that. And hope you don't mind if I use my fantasy name, which is Arthur Thomas Francis Marr O'Piccolo, which I wish I had been born with. But as far as March 17, 1762, as obviously many of your listeners know, that was the origin of the St. Patrick's Day Parade, the first St. Patrick's Day Parade ever anywhere on Earth, including Ireland itself. And the point I like to make, which I don't think gets enough attention. It was more than, it was a march that became a parade, but it was so much more than that. This was a march by conscripted Irish soldiers forced to America by the British, had no interest in being here and fighting against the colonists. They, in a bold act, an absolutely bold act, you know, something that was basically forbidden. They never could have gotten away with this in Ireland. They decided to honor St. Patrick's Day, the patron saint of Ireland, by marching up and down Lower Broadway for the first time ever on March 17, 1762. These Irish soldiers and colonists together in an act of defiance. It was an act of pride, but it was an act of defiance. And they were wearing green, which was forbidden in Ireland, of course. And the point is that no action was taken against them by the British. They successfully held this protest and this march, which now is this, has been going every year right up until now in the most famous parade in the year. And it's a glorious moment, I think, in the history of Irish America. I like to call it the most significant moment in its own way, because it also led up to the American Revolution. I mean, there's a direct arc between March 17, 1762, and the beginning of the American Revolution, in that there were Irish colonists here at the same time who were marching with those Irish soldiers conscripted into the army. And these are the same Irish Americans who 14 years later, in 1776, rebelled. They rebelled at the very same spot here at Bowling Green where the parade began, and it was an Irishman who, I believe, again, the records on March 17, 1762 are very slim, except that it's factual. But a great name, somebody who I talk about all the time, Hercules Mulligan. Hercules Mulligan is one of the great figures of early American history. I don't have time, I don't think, to go into the whole history, but Hercules Mulligan was a leader of the Sons of Liberty, and he led the New York colonists into Bowling Green Park on the evening of July 9, 1776. It was the first official act of insurrection after the signing of the Declaration of Independence. He led them into the park to destroy the most hated statue in America, which was the British King George III on horseback. And I also believe, since Hercules Mulligan was born in 1740, immigrated to America with his family 6 years later, that at the time of the first parade, he would have been 22. Although we haven't been able to find any records, it's almost certain that Hercules Mulligan would have been at that first parade, and it's absolutely true that Hercules Mulligan led the colonists into the park on July 9th to begin the American Revolution.
Arthur, the parade, which, again, we shamelessly want to plug for next Saturday, this is Independence Weekend coming up.
Yes.
But it's also, you know, a great occasion. You know, you had the Consulate of Ireland endorsing, and in
yes.
fact will join the Lower Manhattan Society's great Irish and great American Independence Parade a week from today.
That's right.
And the participation of many of the organizations, and including, you know, the St. Patrick's Day parade, many of those who
participated. Yep, the leadership is fully behind us on this.
Yeah, and, you know, to have Dr. Maureen Murphy as the parade's Grand Marshal, and we played actually a tape of Maureen, and that we heard the story of the flag again. But this is next Saturday. Begins at
at 11 a.m. at what many people consider the most important public Irish memorial in America, which is the Irish Hunger Memorial, which you were very intimately involved with, and your name is on the dedication plaque along with Maureen right there at the Irish Hunger Memorial in Battery Park City. We're on schedule. We hope to step off at 11 a.m. We're asking people to arrive a little bit earlier. When you mentioned Maureen, what's wonderful about her having brought our 12-foot by 8-foot Irish, this very large Irish flag, to Ireland with her and flying it over the Dublin GPO. I don't have to tell anybody about the Dublin GPO, but she is going to be carrying that flag from the Irish Hunger Memorial down to Bowling Green, down Broadway, the same path as that first march and parade on March 17, 1762, carrying that flag with her from Dublin for us to raise in a great ceremony at the end of the parade next Saturday morning, early afternoon at approximately 1 p.m. We expect to have some glorious ceremonies and the flag raising. The Irish flag, and what we fly here, is the original 13-star American flag. We've been given permission by the city because this is where the American Revolution, as I said, had its first official act of insurrection, and absolutely where the American Revolution ended on November 25th, 1783, when George Washington gloriously returned with what was left of the Continental Army after winning at Yorktown, the last British soldiers still in America, and the last British flag still flying in America was right here at Bowling Green. And the complete end to the American Revolution and the beginning of the American nation took place here while he watched the last British soldiers sheepishly depart Lower Manhattan at Bowling Green on November 25th, 1783, and watched that last British flag come down to be replaced by the American flag. By the way, the British weren't very nice about it. They greased the pole and they put spikes in it to try to prevent the flag from being taken down, but we got the flag down and put up the American flag. So it's a glorious, glorious place down here.
You know, I never miss an opportunity to edge my way into very historic events. So I'm going to assume that Maureen will be actually quite tired carrying that flag the whole way down. And in case you haven't invited me, I will at least say that you did, and I'm going to help.
You're going to be one of our key speakers at the flag raising ceremony.
And I'm going to help her raise that flag.
Absolutely, of course you are.
What an historic occasion! It bothers the mind, really. It's a huge occasion, and it is great.
It is, and you know, Adrian, I was so happy on April 24th to be at Battery Park. And at Wagner Park, and that absolutely glorious day-long event that took there. And this is sort of what I like to think of as an encore. You know, we're doing our part to bring in the rest of Lower Manhattan, and we want to show the Irish community. The Irish community, obviously, and the consulate put that glorious event together. Well, the rest of us are stepping up now on July 4th weekend to honor the Irish community, Irish independence, and the greatness of of the Irish nation.
We're referring, of course, since we are simulcasting the program worldwide, on April 24th to celebrate and commemorate the Easter Rising. The Consul General of Ireland, on behalf of the Irish government, Barbara Jones, Consul General, staged the singular best Irish-American event in a century. It cannot be topped. It was one that brought just thousands and more thousands of people down at a very significant 100th anniversary, not only the 100th year, but the exact day, the exact time that the Rising took place, and how amazing and how terrific it is that the flag that we, Maureen and myself, will be raising is, you know, the flag that has now, thanks to Maureen and indeed your own contacts there with the GPO in Dublin, which was a neat trick on its own, that flag will be raised, and it will be, you know, the first time that it is done on the actual on Independence
Day, July 4th weekend. Absolutely,
yeah, first time. What an amazing event it's going to be.
Can I make a special offer to your audience? That event, you know, that could not have been more glorious on April 24th. And I am so proud of the fact that the Lower Manhattan Historical Society and myself, we videotaped the entire day. We weren't able to get everything, but we certainly got most of it. And if anyone wants to see how great that was, we have about a one-hour documentary. If somebody wants to send me an email at info@historicLowerManhattan.org, that's info@historicLowerManhattan.org, I will send the link. You can also just go on Google. If you put in a Google search box, YouTube, and then Lower Manhattan Historical Society, our YouTube channel will come up, and you'll see that and a number of other glorious Irish videos that we have put up recently.
Great. And I'm sure we can link that to our site as well.
Yeah, that'll be even better, yes.
Yeah. Let me ask you, though, about Alexander Hamilton.
Yes.
And we're not talking about the Broadway play that...
Well, in a way, we are.
Well, okay, we'd like to find... we'd say there are no tickets to Hamilton, the Broadway show of this, but tell us quickly, if you will, about Alexander Hamilton and his role.
Well, what I want to tell, I mean, obviously a lot of people are aware of Alexander Hamilton generally, but I mean, the point that we're making here at the Lower Manhattan Historical Society is that absolutely Alexander Hamilton is America's greatest immigrant. I mean, there is nobody else. I've challenged people, anyone else, and any names anyone comes up, they don't compare. That's why we decided, and perfectly, for the July 4th weekend to create the Alexander Hamilton Immigrant Achievement Award. There are a number of Alexander Hamilton Awards, but there has never been one given to immigrants who have come to America and made a tremendous mark here in America, but having been born somewhere else. And that is why we are so proud, after numerous recommendations from important people throughout the Irish community, that on Sunday, July 3rd, at Federal Hall, at 1:30 in the afternoon, we are so proud that you will be receiving the first annual Alexander Hamilton Immigrant Achievement Award. And as you know, Adrian, to get something first is special, because I think as this award grows and grows in the coming years, to say that you were the first to get it is hopefully something you'll always be proud of. We want to invite your listeners to be there. We're asking them to RSVP. Again, you keep using that same email address, info@historicLowerManhattan.org, or they can link to your site also, I guess. But we'd like to know, and hopefully we'll have a big crowd for that event at Federal Hall, which is where the first U.S. government was in 1789. It is the exact spot. The building is gone, but it's the exact spot where Alexander Hamilton became the first Secretary of the Treasury on September 11th. Yes, September 11th, 1789, when and it basically became the savior of the nation with his brilliant financial plan. I mean, no one had ever thought that you could take...
We have to leave it there. The parade on Saturday, friends, at 11 o'clock, and the dedication... the Alexander Hamilton on Sunday. My guest, friends, is Arthur Piccolo, who is the chairman, Bowling Green Association, and co-founder of Lower Manhattan Historical Society. For those who are listening to us on Irish Radio Network, we are going to do what we said we would do.